Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Monday, August 18th, 2014, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, documents reveal that the U.S. Army is preparing to use lethal force against unarmed civilians during full-scale riots in the U.S. Meanwhile, the police in Ferguson are ordered to stand down during rampant looting. Plus, the Nation of Islam and the New Black Panthers are now behind the scenes attempting to direct the protest in Ferguson, Missouri, as the police state continues. Up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, the events in Ferguson, Missouri have alternated between peaceful protests and full-out looting. And, of course, the police have alternated between attacking the peaceful protests and completely ignoring the looting, being MIA. Well, not exactly MIA, because they're actually there, but they're just not doing anything. And this article on InfoWars.com from Michael Snyder says, why were the police in Ferguson told not to stop the rampant looting on Friday night? It says, on Friday night, the city of Ferguson, Missouri was absolutely packed with militarized police, but when the looting started, they did nothing about it. In fact, news reports indicate that the police were lined up just blocks from where the looting was happening, but didn't make any attempt to stop it. According to eyewitnesses, police vehicles were seen driving by some of the stores while they were being looted, still did not respond. And we see USA Today says they did not even attempt to stop any looting. We see from the Fox affiliate in St. Louis, they said the officers left the scene of Ferguson once the looters began attacking the business overnight. Again, from Fox News, a reporter from the station tweeted that police cars were seen driving past some of the stores being looted and did not respond. This is not just us reporting this from the InfoWars reporters on the scene. These are the trustworthy mainstream media reporters saying that the police did nothing about it. And so Paul Joseph Watson asks, are the Ferguson riots being exacerbated by violent provocateurs? He says, with the National Guard now being sent to Ferguson, as the unrest extends into a second week, questions are being asked as to whether provocateurs are being used by authorities to stage violence in order to justify a militarized police crackdown. Radio host Dave Hodges claimed to have spoken to a source within Homeland Security that said that violent rioting and looting was encouraged and exacerbated by undercover DHS agents posing as members of the New Black Panthers. He said, in the past 5 days, I have been contacted via one of my most trusted sources, a member of DHS, who is opposed to the events and DHS involvement in Ferguson, Missouri. The source stated that DHS is running the Ferguson Police Department and that their actions are designed to antagonize and to provoke the locals to violence. He further stated he believed that the ultimate goal was to inflame the local citizens to such a point that martial law would be declared. And, of course, we've had members of the Black Panthers being caught working undercover in the past for the FBI as informants, as Al Sharpton. So we see that the locals here are now welcoming the federal troops' involvement. They're welcoming the federalization of this situation. They're welcoming National Guard troops being put in. They're welcoming people like the New Black Panthers and Al Sharpton. And what's developing here is a full-spectrum dominance and manipulation of this, just as they dominate with both sides the elections, controlling both the Democrats and Republicans, same ones being controlled by the same people. Is the purpose here to create a situation that they can then move to martial law? Well, the Nation of Islam and the New Black Panthers are directing violent protests in Ferguson. Malik Shabazz said, as you well know, on Thursday night, my group, and thanks to you, my organizers, along with the New Black Panther Party and the Nation of Islam, we are the ones who put those men in the streets, and we control the flow of traffic. And the captain of the Missouri Highway Patrol, Ron Johnson, who's now been put in charge by the governor, agreed with those statements. And Shabazz said the curfew enforced by the police represents a prescription for confrontation. Of course, I think that's true. I think they are trying to create a prescription for confrontation. I think they are trying to draw a line in the sand. And if we look at the document that has now come out, training the Army on how they're going to handle this kind of civil unrest, we see that they're fully aware of exactly the types of situations that they try to portray as mistakes. They're fully aware of these. I don't believe they're mistakes at all. Now, this article from Paul Joseph Watson from InfoWars Today says, According to this document, Army is preparing to use lethal force against, quote, unarmed civilians during, quote, full-scale riots in the United States. A document released by the U.S. Army details preparations for full-scale riots within the U.S. during which troops may be forced to engage in, quote, lethal response to deal with unruly crowds or demonstrators. This is a document, about 132 pages, going back only to April of this year, released by Public Intelligence, and this applies not only to operations outside the United States, but also to continental United States, to CONUS, as it points out. And they say the most shocking aspect of this document is the fact that it describes the deployment of a lethal response directed against unarmed civilians, including sniper response and small arms direct fire. Now, you remember that at the very beginning of our coverage last week, we were showing pictures of the military, of course, not only just pointing rifles at people, but lasering them with sniper scopes from quite a bit of a distance, certainly enough of a distance that these protesters, who at that point were very peacefully protesting, they were standing there, screaming at them, but they were not doing anything violent. Still, they were lighting them up with lasers from their scopes. Now, if you look at this graph that's on the article, you can see what they're doing. They basically have laid out in this report a graduated response matrix is what they call it. And they start out, and if you look at this, report here, you see that they have crowd control, and they have it broken down into unarmed civilians as well as armed civilians and armed crowds and with military firearms. The armed civilians include people that just may have knives and clubs. But look at what they're willing to do. They're willing to use snipers against unarmed crowds. And what they point out is they want to target leaders of troublemakers. Okay? And then if the snipers don't make the crowd stand down, then what they do is they move to the next level of response, which is just to have all the soldiers start to shoot at the crowd with small arms fire. If that doesn't work, their matrix then goes to a full-out airstrike. They talk about how they will have to weigh the collateral damage and see if it's worth it. This is full-out war on the American people. This is not a riot control situation. This is not a policing situation. This is a recipe for full-out war on the American people. If you look at the next chart that's on this article where they identify the various parts of the human body and where they're going to inflict different levels of damage to people using riot gear, using clubs and that sort of thing. They have three different areas that are color-coded on here where they can do low-level trauma or where they can do moderate-level trauma or where they can use deadly force. Now, when we look at things like this, it's very troubling in this last week to look at the response from people on the ground who in many ways really understand what's going on. I remember when we had someone that Alex was talking to on the radio, Joe Biggs was talking to him, Alex interviewed him, and the fellow really understood how they were demonizing Michael Brown by releasing a report about the robbery at the convenience store. At the same time, the police said that had nothing to do with the particular incident. Then he turned on it and said he was very glad that the federal forces were coming in to try to get this under control, gave credit to Obama. When you look at something like this, when you look at them marking out how they're going to inflict trauma at different levels to you, how they might inflict deadly force, it reminds me of cattle that might look at something that kind of identifies different choice cuts of meat that they're going to take out of this cow. And the cow might look at that and say, well, I simply can't believe that they would do that because they feed me very well. They take care of me. That's what's happening. That's the mindset of the left. They can't see where this is going. We've been looking at the reports. We have actually gone to one of the training facilities at AP Hill. And of course, that's not the only one. There's Camp Lejeune, and there's also the training facility just outside of Atlanta where we saw this and where Alex Jones pointed out what was really going to come.
It shows the military rounding people up, and every one of them is black. Now, that's newsworthy right there. I've been to these drills where they all are farmers wearing John Deere caps and stuff, saying, you know, you can't take my land, you can't take my guns. Very scary stuff. But it was a black farmer, white farmer, Hispanic farmer. Little extra black folks. I mean, obviously saying, oh, it's for Al-Qaeda, that's a bad group, but it's really for all Americans. Oh, well, blacks, you know, they're kind of looked down on quietly by some people. Oh, look, it's for blacks, so it's okay. And it's military and white guys, white civilians looking on as groups of blacks tump over cars and, you know, get rounded up and thrown behind barbed wire. I mean, this is pretty outrageous. But don't expect Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, the race baiters, to say anything. They're just there to create more racial division in this country, not actually point out that there's preparation to target black communities.
It was very interesting to look at this document that just came out in April and look at how they acted in Ferguson, Missouri. First, using snipers to target leaders of the protests. Then, going against the crowd in a way that they know is going to increase violence. Also, drawing lines in the sand, telling them to move from one place to the other, hoping, I believe, to create a pretext for them to move against the crowd. Now, it's interesting to note that just back in June, there was a bill before Congress to try to step down the militarization of the police. And, of course, Ferguson's congressman voted for that. But so did most of the Democrats and most of the Republicans. It was 355 congressmen who voted down this attempt to rein in the militarization of the police, supplying them with all of this equipment that they then use, as we've seen in Ferguson. It was 145 Democrats who voted to continue giving this to the police departments and 210 Republicans. Now, that program, of course, is the Pentagon's 1033 program. Listen to what they will supply to domestic law enforcement agencies. Aircraft, including unmanned aerial vehicles, armored vehicles, grenade launchers, silencers that I guess they can put on their sniper rifles, toxicological agents, including chemical agents, biological agents, and associated equipment, launch vehicles, guided missiles, ballistic missiles, rockets, torpedoes, bombs, mines, or nuclear weapons. Nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons, they will go that far in terms of giving that to law enforcement. Do you really want to give that to law enforcement after what we've seen in the last week? I don't. Now, look at some of the people, some of the fallout, the casualties of this use of non-lethal force. We have, of course, a female pastor who was there praying with people, trying to move people peacefully out of the way so that the police would not have a pretext to move against the crowd. She was shot with a rubber bullet while chanting Jesus in Ferguson, Missouri. You can take a look at that shot there. And, of course, we have the shot of our own reporter, Joe Biggs, who was also struck with a rubber bullet. Rubber bullets were created by the British military to try to control the people in Ireland in the 1970s. Rubber bullets are very serious weapons. They are not foam earplugs, as the Huffington Post reporter thought. No, rubber bullets were created by the British government to try to control the Irish in the 1970s. And listen to this. In a study of injuries, 90 patients injured by rubber bullets, one died, 17 suffered permanent disabilities or deformities, and 41 required hospital treatment after being fired upon with rubber bullets. They sound like they're pretty safe, but they are metal wrapped in a very, very hard rubber and shot out of a gun. You can kill people, and they do, in fact, kill people with it. And, of course, the police don't like to be filmed. We have more verification that they were not trying to help the Al Jazeera reporters when they shot tear gas at the reporter standing there, obviously with television cameras, with lights. They were trying to shut that down. That's one of the things that you saw them do. They then took those lights, put them down the ground. They took the camera and pointed it at the ground. And we have a video that's now come up, a Ferguson cop threatening to shoot a journalist. He yells a bunch of explicatives at him and says, "Get that light off or you're going to get shot with this." So the police don't want what they're doing filmed when they're not doing the right thing. And so the Wall Street Journal asks, what happens when the police wear body cameras? And they point out that in Rialto, California, where an entire police force is now wearing so-called body-mounted cameras, no bigger than pagers, that record everything that transpires between the officers and citizens, in the first year after they started having the officers wear cameras, the use of force by officers declined by 60%. And citizen complaints against them fell by 88%. Of course, they point out that the police unions are very unhappy with this. They point out police unions fought dash cameras in police cars, which has now become pretty standard. We have a right to film what is happening in public. We have that right as individual citizens. We certainly have that right as members of the press. And anything that happens in public is fair game. And so certainly the police, when they are interacting with people where there's possibility of the use of force, if they were honest, they would want to have that recorded. Now, we see a lot of people celebrating, especially the liberal Democrats who think that Obama is now going to save them with the National Guard. They're cheering the National Guard being deployed in Ferguson, Missouri. And of course, it looks like they're going to be coming out immediately. Now, they don't feel the same way about the National Guard being used to protect our borders by the Texas governor, by Governor Perry. And of course, there's questions in my mind as to why they took them 30 days to deploy, but they actually did deploy last Thursday. Now, the interesting thing is the reaction from the Mexican government. They are protesting the fact that we have national troops guarding our border. The Mexican Foreign Ministry protested Governor Rick Perry's deployment of National Guard troops to the southern border. And it says, according to the AP, to halt the surge of child immigrants. Of course, it's only children, you know, that are coming across. There's no adults and no drug dealers. And as we point out time and again, many of those coming across are teenage gang members of drug cartels, many adults. The children, according to the figures that have been released by the government, comprise at most about 18% of those who are coming across the border, but yet they always portray it as nothing but children. And the Mexican government says that they want to reiterate in a firm and categorical way their rejection of this measure. They say no circumstance at all or change in the border security exists that justifies this measure taken by the state. They go on to say that it doesn't contribute in any way to solving the immigration problem. I would agree with them, probably it doesn't, because these National Guard troop soldiers cannot detain undocumented immigrants, as the AP calls them. Of course, they're illegal aliens. They say that is a federal responsibility. A federal responsibility that the federal government is not taking care of. Now, of course, over the weekend, we see Governor Perry having felony charges brought against him. And many people, even liberals, are pointing out that this is nonsense. Alan Dershowitz is saying that. We have David Axelrod saying that. If you look at the indictment, it's basically two counts. One of them is that he intentionally or knowingly misused government property. In other words, he didn't spend the money that was allocated for this public integrity unit. Can you believe it? This is a public integrity unit that is headed by this drunken DA who is verbally abusive. The police wanted her to be taken out. And, of course, Perry threatened a veto. And that's count number two. They say that he threatened to veto legislation. Well, that is his prerogative as governor. It's not surprising, really, that Governor Perry could have an indictment brought against him by a grand jury. Grand juries essentially do anything the district attorney wants them to do in most cases in this country. We saw just before the Ferguson riots broke out, we saw the top story the preceding week was a cop in New Jersey who said he didn't need to follow the Constitution. Well, what do the police do to honest cops who try to follow the Constitution? Well, we know about that police chief who had his entire department shut down because he got into a verbal altercation with the TSA at the airport on his way to a Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association meeting. Well, they have now taken it to another level. They have indicted him for charges that many believe are simply political payback. We have an interview with his lawyer coming up right after the break. And Alex Jones is going to have an in-depth analysis of this article from Paul Joseph Watson about the Army preparing to use lethal force against unarmed civilians. Stay with us.
Alex Jones here to tell you about how you can help spread liberty worldwide while also enjoying what I have found to be the best tasting 100% organic coffee on the planet. For more than a decade, my favorite coffee has come from the high mountains of southern Mexico, where the Chiapas farmers grow their unique shade-grown Arabica beans. We have now managed to secure these sought-after beans in a highly customized blend. Discover and try a bag of the Patriot Blend 100% organic coffee at InfoWarsLife.com. This coffee gives you a long, smooth pick-me-up for hours without the headaches and heartburn that so many other coffees give me personally. Hands down, this is my favorite coffee, and it's taken us years to secure connections directly to the Chiapas Mexican farmers. Drop by the site today, order a bag or two, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed. Available in original or with our immune support infusion blend, you will be supporting a free press, all the while enjoying a truly great-tasting cup of my favorite coffee. Available at InfoWarsLife.com.
Well, just last week, we had a New Jersey cop caught on video when confronted by someone who believed that their First and Fourth Amendment rights were violated. He said, "I don't care about the Constitution. Obama doesn't care about the Constitution. He's not bound by it. Neither am I." We see this type of corruption in police departments all over the country now. And, of course, in the past, we've had whistleblowers like Frank Serpico about the corruption based on the war on drugs. More recently in New York, we've had Adrian Schoolcraft, who blew the whistle and was testifying on the stop and search procedures of the New York Police Department. He was, for his trouble, he was picked up and arrested by the police there and put in an insane asylum until his father, a former police officer, was able to find him and get him out. That's an ongoing lawsuit going on there. Now, nowhere is this more of a problem, of course, than in Albuquerque. Albuquerque came to everyone's attention with the execution of the homeless man who was camping. And now we have an update to a story that we started covering back in February about the police chief, the entire police department of a small town, taken down as this fellow was on his way to a Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association meeting, and a federal agent who threatened him that he would be fired, that his entire department would be taken out, and they were. Now, 6 months later, that officer is being charged with rape. He's been arrested, and of course, it was a staged event. The local news was told about it. They showed up. He was not given a chance to turn himself in, and there are many questions about this grand jury indictment. The primary witness against him was not there to testify, and the audio and video footage of the arrest in question was not allowed into evidence. So many times we see, especially in Albuquerque, where they have a major scandal about Taser, where the former police chief went to work for Taser, we see that even though they had one of the largest contracts for lapel cameras, they're rarely used in situations where there's questions about what happened. Now we have the opposite situation. We have a police officer who recorded the confrontation wanting to enter that into evidence, not being allowed. So we wanted to talk to his attorney, who himself is a former police officer, who is now a civil rights attorney in Albuquerque, Tom Grover. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Grover. Now, as I was looking at this, I saw the KRQE news report. It looked to me like a clear case of character assassination and some outright lies about the case that I had investigated, going back to when there was the altercation at the airport, the argument, and the threat that from the TSA agent or the federal agent that he would have Shane Harger fired, and subsequently that did happen. They say that that all came about when Shane Harger was trying to get past security screening with identification cards that had two different names. That's not true. I've seen the footage that was released. They cut out the footage of the actual altercation, but he went to the airport police and said, I have two IDs here, and this is the reason I have two IDs. That's how it began. It wasn't like he was trying to slip something past them. So that raised questions right there. Do you want to address that?
Well, first of all, it's an entirely separate issue to the criminal charges that my client is facing right now. But going back to the January incident, I mean, the fact is that Mr. Harger, at his own initiative, approached security to present them and disclose to them that he had his actual identity, then an alias identity relating to a witness protection program that he had been involved in. And in alerting them to that fact, it became, you know, this sort of aggravated situation where people started posturing and it unfolded into, you know, a much larger, more complicated mess. But that's entirely unrelated to the situation facing Mr. Harger right now.
I know. I just brought that up because it looked to me like a clear case of them trying to make him look like a dangerous and convicting him in the public in the eye of public opinion. They showed up at his arrest, and that in and of itself is unusual, isn't it? Typically, if there's a grand jury indictment, there's an arraignment date that is set up where they have a chance to turn themselves in. Instead, they went directly out with the cameras, with the local news station, and arrested him in front of the cameras.
Oh, there's no doubt that this was a staged event. I mean, as his attorney, I didn't even know law enforcement was on their way until after they had picked him up and I received a phone call from one of the arresting officers. The fact that, you know, media personnel and camera personnel from all three stations were present at the police station when they brought Mr. Harger in for transportation to the detention center is a clear concerted effort to have the media present, and they were alerted by government agencies. They certainly weren't alerted by myself or Mr. Harger. And it does nothing but sort of fan the flames of ridicule and in many ways maybe prejudicial to my client.
You talk about being prejudicial. In the article and in the video report, they say state police say Harger was taken into custody without any problems, as if they expected him to come out shooting or something. I mean, that's the kind of reporting that they did. They talked to a police officer, and even though they cover themselves legally by saying that this is an alleged crime, they use the term alleged, they have a quote from a police officer says, this just gives bad law enforcement a name when cops do this type of thing. So in other words, they're trying to convict him in the court of public opinion. And I guess I have a question also about the timing of this. They say that this began back in January, the investigation began back in January. To your knowledge, is that when it started?
That's my understanding. And much like Mr. Harger initiated disclosure to TSA back in January, when this allegation first came into the municipality that he's working with, he referred it. My understanding is that he referred it himself to state police for investigation. And you know, we have to put this in context, which is the state of policing in New Mexico is under tremendous scrutiny because of DOJ's impending consent decree on the state's largest police department, that being the Albuquerque Police Department. So if you're an officer, if you're a law enforcement officer, whether you're a police officer or a sheriff's deputy in the state of New Mexico, if you're accused of some sort of wrongdoing, there's not going to be any degree of latitude of discretion given to you by any of the prosecuting authorities. They're simply not going to do it because of the mismanagement and the dire condition of policing in the state because of so many things having happened and not being addressed. So that's the current climate of New Mexico policing.
Now, this incident happened back in January. When were the allegations made? Was that back in January? Did she make those allegations in January? Did she make them more recently?
Let's particularize that a little bit. I mean, the alleged incident happened supposedly in January. Mr. Harger maintains his innocence, and under the eyes of the law, he's presumed to be innocent. So this alleged incident supposedly happened in January. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And when did she come forth and say something about that? Did she do that at the time? Because it's my understanding from your statement to KRQE, you said that she was not present at the indictment, which was pretty unusual. So when did she make these allegations?
Weeks after the alleged incident is my understanding.
As a former law enforcement officer yourself, as someone who was a supervisor in the Albuquerque Police Department, how would you characterize, you talked about how there's now this current of suspicion about law enforcement in the area. And of course, we've covered that many times, and we still see officers like the one who was in charge of the group that shot that homeless man. That kind of brought it into national attention. He's been subsequently promoted. I mean, what is your take on the environment there? You said that everybody's watching them very closely. What is your feeling about this?
Well, I think, you know, after so many years where questionable police misconduct hasn't received any scrutiny, we're now in a phase of the state's history where anytime there's an allegation of misconduct by the police, it's going to be heavily scrutinized. Now, any law enforcement officer in the country will agree that the second you take somebody into custody, you know, you're truly in care of that person. And when you take a person of the opposite sex in custody, there's procedures that you follow and that are taught in the academy to address that. So this is, you know, this sort of notion of a person alleging some improper action by a police officer when they've been in their control and custody is something that's, you know, succinctly aware for departments. And it's one thing when you're a large department and you have access to resources. It's another thing when you're a very small department and have very limited access to resources. So your exposure to these types of allegations increases as the size of your department decreases. And given the current state of things in New Mexico, given Mr. Harger's outspokenness in his particular county, you know, it's sort of the making of a perfect storm where, unfortunately, things aligned up where now Mr. Harger is faced with these charges. I've been involved in three other incidences where officers have faced the same type of charges, you know, total absence of any physical evidence and based, you know, strictly on, you know, what he said versus mm-hmm. she said, or she said versus he said. And, you know, this is something that the prosecution is going to have to overcome. There are issues. And unfortunately, in those cases, you know, prosecutors are not going to use discretion and get rid of these cases. I mean, at least not in the cases that I've been involved in. They're going to take it to trial unless it's taken from them by, you know, a judge, you know, approving a motion to dismiss it or finding that there's, you know, certain elements not existing. They're not going to do it because they're simply not going to put themselves in that sort of position of being that DA where they dismiss the case, especially not in this climate. So that's, unfortunately, that's where Mr. Harker's in.
I understand. Now, you're talking about the difference in resources between small and large police departments. They just recently have had essentially a taser gate with the former police chief of the Albuquerque Police Department retiring and then going to work for Taser, and then Taser subsequently landing one of the biggest contracts I've ever had for, amongst other things, lapel cameras. And then we find subsequent to that that in many cases where that might be incriminating to the police, there's suddenly no recording of that. And we've talked about that in the past. Now, in this particular case, however, at the grand jury, one of the things that was surprising was the fact that the witness did not testify, but there's also, as I understand, existing audio and video recordings that might have some bearing on the case that might help Shane Harker and his innocence? Or
That's my understanding, and we have yet, despite our request, and granted, you know, yesterday was really the first day of business since the grand jury proceeding, we've yet to receive a recording from the grand jury to find out really where things are. I mean, you have to understand that we're in the very preliminary stages of this case. Our first order of business right now is getting Mr. Harker out of jail. He's clearly not a threat to the community. Otherwise, they wouldn't have taken the time that they did between the inception of these allegations and taking a grand jury. I mean, we're talking over 6 months. Mm-hmm. He's got, you know, financial and personal attachments to the community. He's clearly not a threat, and there isn't any reason to keep him incarcerated under such, you know, a strict measure of bond.
Yeah, they have they have very high bail, and it's a cash-only bail, as far as I understand.
Cash-only. So our first order of business is really to get Mr. Harker out of prison and get him out of jail and get him with his family, and then we'll start forming together our plan to effect a very aggressive and very proper defense.
Well, we picked up on this case, and we learned about it from the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, from Sheriff Mack, and I've talked to Shane Harker in a couple of interviews, and I actually met him at the Bundy Ranch. He was there. He traveled at his own expense because, like us, he was concerned about the abuses of force in that area. To me, he didn't seem like a cocky, arrogant person who's seeking attention. He was a very straightforward, very sincere person. When I met him personally, I know that he stood down there with the farmers, with the ranchers, with the people on horseback. He stood there as they were threatening to shoot us. He believed that they would shoot because certainly, as Albuquerque and New Mexico has a history, they don't make idle threats. When the police say that they're going to shoot you in New Mexico, they frequently do. Sometimes they shoot you without giving you a warning, evidently. But he stood there nevertheless because he was concerned about people's rights. So what can people do to help Shane Harker at this point?
You know, there are two things that people can do. One, they can openly express their support and belief that he is innocent and that he is a good guy. And Shane is a person who I'd leave my kids with this evening if he were out. I don't have a problem with that. And then two, unfortunately, you know, because he's the sole provider for his family, he's going to need as much financial support as he can because, as you can imagine, mounting a defense in the face of such charges is fairly expensive. So any support that he can receive financially will help to help offset, unfortunately, the sad reality is that legal expenses are that. They're expensive and they continue to climb, especially with more aggressive defense. So
is there some kind of a defense fund that's been set up for him?
My understanding is that their family members are in the process of putting that together right now.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be on the lookout for that. Thank you so much for joining us. And
You're
as
welcome.
I said, I certainly don't believe that he's the type of person who would do this. He seemed to me to be a very sincere officer, exactly the opposite of what we see all too often, and that is officers who could care less about the Constitution, could care less about the rule of law. I think he's concerned for other people, as he was for himself when he spoke back at the airport after multiple confrontations from the
I think that's a very accurate description of Mr. Harger. You know, he's a good guy, and like I said, we're going to defend this aggressively, because if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Tom Grover.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to get some answers to some of those questions that were raised. Why didn't the alleged victim testify before the grand jury? Why weren't they shown the audio and video recordings? And why wasn't he given an arraignment date where he could turn himself in rather than stage a perp walk in front of all the networks? So I called the district attorney. Lemuel Martinez, the district attorney of the 13th District of New Mexico. He basically would not give me any information about what happened in the grand jury, saying that it was secret and closed. He wouldn't comment on anything, saying that the arraignment date and the amount of bail, the fact that it was an entirely cash bail, that was all set by the grand jury. Of course, we know that grand juries pretty much do what they're told. But if you want to follow this story, stay with us at InfoWars. We will be keeping abreast as to what's going on, not only with Shane Harger, but also with the many incidents in New Mexico and what's going on there with the police departments, with the rules of engagements there. If you're not a supporter of Prison Planet TV, please consider supporting our operation. It'll help you stay in touch with what's going on, developing news on a nightly basis, as well as access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. 11 other people can share it with you simultaneously. That's 12 of you can be watching off of that one subscription, and there is a price break if you get an annual subscription. Well, that's it for tonight. Join us tomorrow at 11 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
City of Austin tap water versus filtered City of Austin tap water.
I can, like, taste dirt in it.
God knows what's in this.
This has an aftertaste. Tastes like Austin water?
Yeah, it does. Ugh.
These people just sampled City of Austin tap water straight from the faucet. Next, we had them try a sample of tap water filtered through the ProPure G2.0 filtration system.
High quality H2O.
That one is better.
Tastes like nothing.
Yep, I know what good water tastes like. It's good water.
Most tap water contains added substances like fluoride, chlorine, Monsanto's deadly pesticide, glyphosate, and many others. Studies prove that these substances are linked to an assortment of major health issues, including tooth decay, lowered IQ, and even cancer.
It tastes like you're drinking out of the lake when you're drinking tap water.
Yeah, there's that processed flavor to it.
The ProPure G2.0 filtration system removes these deadly substances and many more, leaving only fresh-tasting, deliciously clean water.
Okay, this is very tasty.
It's good water.
Refreshing.
It's good.
Go to InfoWarsStore.com today. Use promo code WATER and save 10% off your ProPure purchase. Again, that's InfoWarsStore.com or call 1-888-253-3139.
As you know, for a long time, we have been warning you about the globalist plan to militarize our police and to stage and provocateur crises across the United States to bring in what can only be called a permanent state of martial law and political oppression. In the last month, I have warned you that the latest crisis Obama and his controllers want to stage is a race war in this country to be the cover for the MRAPs, the helicopters, the drones, the sound cannons to be rolled out against the American people in general. U.S. Army training to fight black Americans. Actual video up on InfoWars.com. I shot a 20-minute overdrive, almost 30-minute special report last night that aired after the nightly news. The news is always 30 minutes long, but when it's extended, when the main news ends, some stations are already carrying, not just affiliate, you know, PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. We then go into, for just online viewers, an extra expanded overdrive, and we did a very important breakdown of this. It's regular Army training, battling black people in the drills. And I made a big deal about it when we saw some of this training a few years ago where it was only white people. So they're just training to attack certain ethnic groups. And again, we're not demonizing the military even here. They don't like what's going on. They're freaking out. This is a plan to divide and conquer this nation. It was 2 years ago, back on July 16th, 2012, that a public Army document was put out, confirmed to be authentic, where the U.S. Army admitted that they're training to confiscate guns from people who do not turn them in under orders. That was an earlier 2012 version of ATP 3-39.33, civil disturbances. Then, in 2013, last year, the Army came out and released a public document about how to process Americans via their Social Security numbers into the FEMA camps or emergency centers under the Emergency Centers Establishment Act. Now, 3 days ago, last Friday evening, the U.S. Army released the then-secret April 2014 updated version of the Civil Disturbances Secret Manual. The article is on Infowars.com with a link to Army.mil to read the document for yourself. This document details the most frightening example of treason I could ever imagine. IS or ISIS lines up their political enemies and shoots them. The Nazis shot unarmed civilians. Our military, who are good men and women on average, are being slowly twisted and inducted into this under the rubric of dealing with crises that the globalists themselves have created. The document publicly says they're preparing for full-scale riots across the U.S. and to use lethal force against unarmed, nonviolent Americans, and how to shoot them in the spine or the heart or the testicles, depending on how you want to terrorize the public. You've noticed the Marines and Army have been doing mass zombie wave drills where they practice mowing down masses of unarmed people. And they say, don't worry, it's only in case zombies attack. That's how they dehumanize the mass of the public in the eyes of the military, is say, oh, they're just rats, they're just parasites. Again, the Nazis and the Soviets and others would liken their enemies to rats or animals as well. This is part of the dehumanization process. This new document openly talks about how to terrorize the public, how to shoot unarmed people. And it is the local police who are being federalized, who are being given the armored vehicles and the training and the uniforms. They have to go to Army-sponsored training classes where they're taught the force continuum, where they're taught civil disturbances, ATP 3-39.33. That's why they were aiming guns at Josh Owens, our reporter, in broad daylight, who was peacefully there videotaping in the press area. That's why they were shooting rubber bullets and tear gas at mainline reporters like Al Jazeera and arresting Washington Post reporters inside McDonald's who were there peacefully getting a hamburger, if you can call it that, at McDonald's. Because this is to be a hardcore takeover. And the police and military are compartmentalized just following orders. That's why it's important. That's Josh Owens right there on screen having the M4 pointed at him. That's why it's vital to understand this is about a federalization process. And DrudgeReport.com today linked to our article with video evidence proving the new Black Panther Party, the Black Ku Klux Klan, Al Sharpton, admitted FBI, and others are there orchestrating and running the violent demonstrations and the destabilization that's happening. We've seen looting now over the weekend, police getting shot at. This is an attempt to start a civil war. I know you've heard this about 1,000 times from me or more because this has been the plan. They're even putting out the diagrams, and we'll scroll up and show you, of where to shoot people. Again, this is really happening. So they want to get the military and the police federalized in a war with the American people. First they primed the pump claiming it's for Al-Qaeda. Now they say, no, it's not for Al-Qaeda. It's for the inner cities. But the real training is for the Tea Party and gun owners and returning veterans. So all you good old boys that are going along with this saying, well, it's the out-of-control inner cities, you know, the welfare class, we got to do this to keep everybody safe. You are literally putting your neck in the noose for the takeover. Obama has massively increased the police state funding for domestic operations, and they are suckering everyone right now. Infowars.com is the leader in exposing this. Whether it was NSA spying or military training to take guns, we've told you the truth, we have the track record, and we're showing you the documents. There will be trolls denying this even exists. There will be trolls saying no guns were taken during Katrina. This is all a globalist attempt to maneuver the country into martial law and to get the police and military and public to go along with it. I'm all for law and order. But we live in a day and age where the Democrats are arresting Rick Perry, arresting Dinesh D'Souza, harassing the Tea Party with the IRS. This military, this police, these bureaucracies, though they're made up of good people on average in many cases, the orders are evil. They just give them a cover story to rationalize what they're doing. So please pray for America. Pray for an awakening. Pray for America to repent. And I don't mean run to some mega church and worship some state-run preacher, but just get our hearts right with God and try to turn things around before they get a lot worse. This is all part of the season of escalation, the season of crisis I've warned you of. This is the New World Order coming down on us like a ton of bricks. This is not a game. This is the attempt to start the Civil War, where they will then stage terror attacks, blame it on the Liberty Movement during a race war, and then have the feds come in and crush the inner city people and the, quote, mainly white militia as a pretext of restoring order. I've studied it. This is one of their main battle plans. They've got other scenarios they're working on as well. This is the main one, and it looks like they're going live with it. Repeat. This is not a drill. We've got to get the word out. Only exposing this paradigm and getting people outside the box can reverse it and stop it. And if we do back it off, people will say, oh, I thought it was going to be martial law. I thought the NSA was spying on me. That doesn't matter. We've done our job again and backed this thing off that's been growing like a cancer. Because the documents are here. This is something right out of Nazi Germany, right out of Soviet Russia. This is unbelievable, and it's happening here in America. Just like the torture and the secret police and the warrantless spying and the GMO and our military being under UN command and 2+2=5 being taught in Common Core, we are living in 2014. We are living in a science fiction movie, a globalist state-run utopia that's really a dystopic nightmare. Until tomorrow, I'm Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars Nightly News for David Knight and the rest of the crew. If you're watching or listening to this transmission, you are the resistance, and don't take that for granted, folks. They're moving against the free press right now. So spread the word while you still can.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. And now you can protect yourself from corrupt cops with the InfoWars dash cam. It's your car's black box that records all that the driver sees and hears. And introducing the Block It Pocket. It renders your phone undetectable while protecting your private data and your health. Or take back your privacy and protect your personal information by getting your very own detractor cell phone pouch. So get incredibly high quality freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.